Daniel in the Kitchen talks about food. Daniel in the Kitchen talks recipes. Daniel in the Kitchen talks about lots of other things on Community Radio. Welcome to the Daniel in the Kitchen. My name is Lana Noctigal.
And I'm Donna Prisgintas.
We gather here around our kitchen table to talk about food, farming, advice, recipes, and opinions. And we gather here at the studios of KHOI Community Radio in beautiful downtown Ames. Middle of Ames, the middle of Iowa, the center of it all. Welcome to our table. Well, hope your Thanksgiving was stuffed with a lot of good things. Things are sort of just picking up here. We've had Black Friday, which is also Buy Nothing Day, and then there's the Buy Local Day, and then there's the Cyber Monday or something, and things just are kind of picking up on our way into the holidays here. And as you heard a little earlier, today is Giving Tuesday. I don't know where this comes from, but that is a good idea.
Well, never miss any commercial opportunity here. So
Right. And I think giving is a good thing, and giving to your local community radio station, KHOI, is a good thing.
Yeah, my inbox this morning and my email was every single charity and nonprofit that I even listen to or pay attention to at all, you know, just click, 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 click.
Huh?
Everybody's got their hand out today.
And they know you have a soft heart. Good for you,
yes.
Donna. Good for you. Well, today, deck the halls. Be merry. Fa-la-la.
Right. We are into our Christmas season now.
It's a little early, but
it's not too early for a lot of things, you know? I mean, there's certain Christmas things that you have to line up. You can't wait till the last minute for buying your presents or making your mincemeat, for example. Or getting a Christmas tree.
So let's talk about Christmas trees. I had the good opportunity of last Friday, there was the tree lighting ceremony in downtown Story City. And I've gone a couple years before. It's usually kind of cold. This year, it was absolutely beautiful. The turnout was great. They put this huge tree right in the middle of Main Street. Everybody has to drive around it for a month, which is not bad. And the power and light people light it up so pretty. They had changing lights this year. And this is a 108-year-old tradition. Story City.
You can tell that the intersection was built to hold this Christmas tree. It is so big.
I think so, too. 108 years. Story City was one of the first to have a electrically lit Christmas tree, and they celebrate in a big way. Lots of people there. People were singing. There were carols. There was a bunch of school kids that had a tuba band.
Oh!
And they,
another tuba band.
They did a bunch of little tubas and baritones and a little percussion section, and they did their city proud. And there was a chili supper at the fire station, and there was treats from May's Cafe, a little coffee shop there in town, and lots of things. And the highlight, of course, was Frosty the Snowman arrived down Main Street at the event on the front of snowplow.
I was going to guess a tractor, but that's the snowplow is even...
It fit in pretty well.
Yeah.
So we are in our season now, and we're thinking Christmas trees. The tree is lit in Story City. Joining us at our kitchen table today is Chris Deal. Welcome to our table, Chris.
Well, thank you very much for having me, Donna and Lana, and good afternoon to you.
Well, Chris, the whole Deal family is, of course, well known in this part of Iowa for apples. Apple cider, all kinds of, and I want to personally thank you, Chris, for keeping growing all of the old varieties of apples. I am not a Honeycrisp fan, so I like the tart, the old, and I can always find them because you guys are still growing them and you can buy them. I know always I can go to the fairway. Of course, you're at the farmer's market all summer long, and your cider is fabulous. So thank you, thank you, thank you. We really appreciate what you make for our community, what you grow. But you're here today to talk about Christmas trees because you guys also grow. You are a Christmas tree farmer.
Yes. Tell us about Deal's Orchard.
Yes.
Yeah. Good, good. Tell us.
Well, we, in 1999, would have been my parents, Gerald and Cindy, and then brothers and I. And so there's three boys that make up the fourth generation, Benji, myself, and Rob. And so we set out some Christmas trees. And roughly 5-6 years after that, we had our first commercially available or locally available Christmas trees. And so we've been selling Christmas trees at our location just west of Jefferson for going on what is 20 years now. And so it's become another season for us, one that certainly is a little bit calmer than the middle of fall and the middle of apple harvest season and pumpkins and everything. And by the time we get through that, we're ready for something that's a little bit calmer. But it's a special season. We love it. We see a lot of families year after year, and so we get to be a part of their holiday tradition. We get to do something that's fun and unique, and something we really look forward to every year.
So do you cut all the trees, or people come and pick out the tree they want and you cut it, or how does it work?
We have a variety of options available, and so we plant several different varieties of trees ourselves, Scotch pine, Canaan fir, Douglas fir, concolor fir, and we also bring in some pre-cut trees. And so for the last several years, we've been bringing trees in from Minnesota, Fraser firs especially. The soil we've got over in our area is such that it's difficult for us to grow a Fraser fir. But we also bring in some additional varieties, balsam fir, Canaan fir, and this year some longer needle varieties, white pine especially. And so when people come out, they see a multitude of pre-cut trees that they can choose from, or if they want to walk out or drive out, I guess, into the area where we've got ours planted, they are welcome to go and cut their own tree as well.
Oh, that's good.
Oh, they can. Do you provide the saw, or you have to bring your own saw?
We do provide saws, yes.
Very good. Talk about the different varieties of trees. You know, they're not just all called Christmas trees. Why would people choose different kind of trees?
Well, there's a lot of it's personal preference. When we first started planting, the vast majority of what we planted was Scotch pine trees. And so that's a longer needle and something that grows very well on the soils around here. And what we learned is that people really enjoyed Scotch pine, but there's also very much an interest in a shorter needle variety, fir varieties. And so we started to grow some of those varieties as well. And through a fair amount of trial and error, which is a part of growing anything, especially nowadays, we figured out what does work, what doesn't work. We tried Fraser firs and just couldn't or did not have much luck with them, but found that Canaan's and Douglas firs and concolors did grow fairly well in our soils, and so we now offer those as well. But it's each one's got a little bit different, has different characteristics, whether it be the size of the needle, the color of the needle, and in the case of white pine, for example, the strength of the branches. And so lots of just various options for people to consider when they look at a Christmas tree.
Oh, good. Yes, because you have to kind of consider that these wonderful things out in your Christmas tree plantation generally have to fit inside of a home. So I suppose some are wider and some are taller. And I often wonder how many times people pick a Christmas tree and get home and do have to lop off a little bit on the bottom because they're so lovely.
We think there's some physical phenomenon when you bring a tree into the house that it grows. It grows a foot wider, a foot taller.
That's probably true. Either that or the house shrinks, one or the other, you know.
Yeah, one or the other.
Some geometric thing is going on there. So what's the average length of time? Do you start from a seed? Do you start from a seedling? How do you do this?
Yeah, we start with seedlings, and so we get trees that are have been in the nursery usually for 2 years, and we'll plant those out. So roughly a foot tall.
Okay.
And we'll plant them out early spring, and you'll get roughly a foot of growth every year on those trees. And so if you're buying a 6 foot tall pine tree, Scotch pine tree, it probably has been growing there for roughly 6 years, maybe five, maybe seven. In general, the Scotch pine grow a little quicker, and the fir, the short needle varieties, grow a little bit slower. And so you'll see a slight price difference. That's why the short needle costs just a little bit more, because it takes a little bit more to grow them. And also the care for them is a little bit different. Every tree gets shaped every year. So we're up with machetes, getting the Christmas tree, that nice shape of
that
Christmas tree.
That perfect tree.
Doesn't occur naturally. Uh-huh. And so each one gets shaped each year. And,
wow.
And so we spend a lot of time with them.
How do you keep the deer from shaping them?
Prayer.
Do your deer respond to prayer? Oh, those are divine deer,
no,
I guess.
Not very well, we've learned. Not very well. No, white pine is an interesting one, because white pine grows great in the soil here, but deer, for whatever reason, love a white pine tree. And so I think of the thousands of trees that we have right now, I can think of maybe three or four white pine that are out there, and they don't have that nice Christmas tree shape because deer tend to gravitate toward them. So, no, the deer are absolutely out there and part of this whole process, like they are with growing just about anything in the state nowadays.
Well, I guess you could have some hunters wandering around maybe, huh?
Maybe.
Yeah, we very much support deer hunters.
Very good. I remember picking out Christmas trees with my dad up in Wisconsin, and well, this was clear back when people didn't really fuss over Christmas trees too much. I mean, you'd get a bunch of green stuff on the back of a truck, and I figured that's why God invented corners in the living room. You put the bad side to the corner. There was always something good enough on a tree, even if it was kind of wobbly or missing parts. By that time it has all those good old Christmas ornaments on it, they all look pretty nice. They all look pretty nice. Also, I remember, is it just a variety, but sometimes you're lucky enough to have a tree that still has a few little pine cones on it. I thought that was very good. Is that something that happens, or it seems like they'd shed their pine cones?
The majority of them will shed, but there are trees that come in with pine cones, and we have a tree shaker, and so when someone brings in a tree or they pick out a tree, we'll put it on the tree shaker, and that shakes out the dead needles, and surprisingly, a lot of times the pine cones will survive the shaker and still be on when people take their tree home. So most of them, you don't see the pine cones, but I would say maybe 10% of the trees that come through will see at least a few pine cones. Every once in a while, they're really loaded down.
So you have a tree shaker. Now, that's something I knew nothing about. I suppose that it shakes out. If there's an owl nesting in the tree, it will shake the owl out so the owl doesn't leave the farm.
It shakes just about everything out. We joke with the kiddos that we leave the squirrels in there, but I think it probably shakes them out as well.
Uh-huh. Those squirrels.
It's a service that you provide. I see some people or some trees now are wrapped in a netting. It seems kind of overly fussy, but is that something that you do too?
Well, you may think so, but when you try to get a tree that's 4 or 5 feet wide through a 3 foot door, you appreciate that netting.
that's for. Good. Good.
When you come out, we'll shake the tree. We will net the tree for you. We also have a tree driller. And so some people, we sell a drilled tree stand. And so it's one that there's a long spike in it and you pound it on rather than the more typical stands where you've got four screws mm-hmm. around the base of it, and you spend a little time. Usually that's kind of a test of a marriage, right? It's when you have to line up the Christmas tree. So we've got an alternative option for the stand where we can drill it and set it there for you as well.
Well, if you drill it, does it make it more stable so the tree doesn't fall over when the children or the cat try to climb it?
Maybe more stable, but there's obviously a threshold when you have I've got a 9-year-old and a 7-year-old, a 4-year-old. So if they hit that tree with enough momentum, There's a reason we do a little extra attachment in our house with a thin wire at the top of it. Yep.
Good idea.
So you have some attractions too for people to come out for Christmas, right?
Yeah, so our store, we open the store at the farm usually in July, and we do summer varieties, and then once we hit fall, we're in full swing with the apples and the pumpkins and cider. And then once we get to November, we close down our kids play area, and we convert the sales store, the sales room, into more of a Christmas theme. And so one of the tables that's full of apples in the fall time, it changes over, and it has a Christmas village in the middle of it with a train that's driving around the outside of it. So the kids love to come and watch the Christmas train driving around. And then we put out, or we offer anyone who comes out free popcorn, free samples of our hot cider, our spiced hot cider. And so it very much has a different feel in the store when you come out for Christmas season compared to when you're out during fall season.
Okay. So it's a very much bring your family and start Christmas. So you must be super busy this week and next week.
The weekend after Thanksgiving, Black Friday for us is peak Christmas tree season.
Ooh.
Friday, Saturday, and Sunday. So it's a busy weekend. At one point we looked up and I think there was five or six families with a tree ready for us to shake it out for them. So it's fun. It's still busy. But we enjoy it. We love getting to see families year after year who've made us a part of their holiday tradition.
Oh, good.
Well,
good.
Now, do you have any tips for how to keep your tree looking perky through, you know, because most people keep them up for about a month. And by the time you drag it out of the house, there's needles everywhere. What's the best thing to do to keep your tree in good shape?
So what we recommend for everybody who comes out is that you want to have a fresh cut on the bottom of that tree. And so if people have a way at home to put a fresh cut on, that's the best.
So just take the saw and have at it.
Put it right in the water.
Okay.
Yep. Yeah. And depending on, like, if it's one of the pre-cut trees that we bring in from Minnesota, we'll take off probably an inch or so on the bottom of the tree. If it's one that you had just cut out in our field, it doesn't need to be much for a cut. But you just want the sap will start to congeal on the bottom of that. Mm-hmm. So if you can get that fresh cut, that's going to really help with that water uptake. Otherwise, we will offer a fresh cut, and we just recommend people get it into water as soon as they possibly can. And then the first water, we recommend people actually use warm, even hot water. And again, it's all about trying to get a good uptake at the base of that tree. And once you get it in that water, you just make sure that trunk of the tree stays submerged. But it's pretty simple, and we've had really good luck with that for a couple decades now.
Good. There's no additives. I remember my mom and dad discussing putting sugar in the water or some Christmas
tree
food.
Yeah.
Is that just something to sell?
Food coloring. We've heard all sorts of things. When in our homes, it's just straight tap water, warm, hot to start, and then just regular tap water, and that's worked well for us. You'll have people who swear by the sugar and some of these other additives. So we haven't heard of anything that hurts. I'm sure there are things that you should not do, but we recommend just straight water.
Good. Okay, then at the other end of the spectrum, do you have any tricks for getting it out of the house without making a terrible mess?
We do, this sounds like a commercial, so apologies, but we do offer a tree bag, a plastic bag that you can put underneath the tree and then wrap up and around it to help get that tree out and keep the needles on it.
Oh, so when you set the whole thing up, you've already got the disposal bag there rolled up under the tree and you just...
Yep.
I think I would be a customer for that.
Well, see, you never think about it until January. There you go. There you go.
It was the $2 tree bag that did it, huh?
Yeah, very good. Very good. You mentioned that actually Christmas trees are something you look forward to because it's kind of the slower part of the year, but you're kind of winding down. That's good. And you mentioned deer are a challenge. Are there other challenges for Christmas? Are there tree diseases or something that you have to worry about?
There are plenty of challenges.
Oh, good.
And so drought. We've had a few very dry years, and so keeping the trees alive, especially the newer planted trees. So we've spent a lot of time irrigating the trees, especially the younger ones. But we have lost a few with drought. More recently, there's actually been a significant uptick in demand for trees. And so we've seen just a trend, which is a good thing to an extent, but we've seen demand growing year after year. And then with the pandemic in 2020, a bit of a step change. And all of a sudden, there are a lot more people who are interested in live trees, which is great for tree growers, except to plan for that, you need to think about that about 7 years beforehand. And so no one forecasted a drought plus a national or international pandemic. So across the country, there very much is a Christmas tree shortage right now. So we couldn't bring in nearly as many trees for the pre-cuts as we wanted to. Last year, for the first time, we had to limit the number of trees that people cut because we didn't want to have people cut out all of the next year's supply or the next year's supply. And so it's going to take probably another 3 or 4 years, I'd say, for us to grow our way out of the tree shortage just because of the increased interest in Christmas trees and then drought not only in our area, but in several Christmas tree growing areas around the country.
What are the Christmas tree growing areas?
Where are the Christmas tree growing areas?
Well, you mentioned Wisconsin. Wisconsin certainly is one. Mm-hmm. Minnesota is where we've gotten trees in from recently. And then there's several spots, I think, in the Appalachia region. We've had trees come in from North Carolina before. I think North Carolina is well known for some of these varieties. And so there's a few spots. Those are the ones I know of. I'm sure that there's more beyond that.
Now, how does it work when the trees are cut in a certain, do you kind of cut them in a certain area because they're the right size? And then what do you do with that area after you've basically, do you selectively cut it or do you clear cut it or are the trees planted in with the apple trees? Or how does this work? How do you manage the whole overall planning of it?
Loosely managed.
Just like in the nature, right?
let it go. All of our trees are cut your own. And so we don't pre-cut our trees, say, for a handful every year. And so as the trees are planted in a block and they get into that height where people are interested in, naturally those trees slowly get taken out. And then as the block opens up, we start to replant within that same row. One of the things we've learned, one of the many things we've learned the hard way, is that certain varieties grow better in replant area and certain varieties don't. And so we've expanded. We've got a couple new blocks that we're planting out now because Scotch pine, especially, we learned this. We go to various
tree schools
in the off season, right? Tree school, exactly. And so a professor, a forester, had finally enlightened us that Scotch pine don't grow very well in a replant scenario. So, oh, that makes sense for what we're seeing. So, yeah, we infill where we can, and we add new blocks as needed.
So if there's a stump, how far do you plant the seedling from the stump?
In the springtime, we'll go out and we'll cut all the stumps down rough to a point where we can take a mower deck over them. Mm. And then we'll plant a few inches, probably 6 to 12 inches away from the stump.
Planning for the next. Oh, that's good. I want to take a little break here and remind everyone this is KHOI Community Radio, and this is the Don Alana Kitchen, tasty radio for the heart of Iowa. back. That was a little bit of a tune from the Barn Owl Band called A Trip to Truro. We'll hear more from the Barn Owl Band later. We are talking to Chris Deal about Christmas trees. It is that time of year. Yes, it is. And he is from Deal's Orchard over in Jefferson, Iowa. They've been supplying good things for this part of the country for a long time. I like their stuff.
Now, you still have apples for sale, don't you?
We do, yes. We still have plenty of apples for sale. We're still distributing apples to grocery stores throughout central Iowa as well, apples and cider.
So how do you – tell us a little about your storage apples and how you do that.
So the way we store apples, and I'll preface by saying we are, in the grand scheme of things, we are a tiny speck in apple production. So 45 acres. For us, we think that's enough to keep us busy. But if you go to an apple producing region in the country, they do things on a different scale. But we have a large cooler, and so we can store roughly 10,000 bushel of apples in that cooler. And
10,000 bushels.
We keep it roughly 34 degrees, and we try to keep the humidity as high as possible in there as well. And so keeping the apples cool and the humidity high is what helps keep those apples stored and is in good of condition as possible. The apples will ripen, they release a gas called ethylene. And so as it gets warmer, the apples will release that gas, and that's what the whole saying that one rotten apple spoils the whole bunch, there's truth to that. And so you cool them down and you increase the humidity, and that helps slow that whole natural process.
Well, I don't know what you do, but it is, you do a really, really good job. Sometimes when you get an apple that's a storage apple, which I think people don't realize, but most apples are storage apples because they only ripen in a small window, and yet you eat them for months and months and months. But sometimes there's a flavor from a storage apple, and I have never had any of that with your apples. They are just – talk about some of the varieties that are available now.
Yeah, so we grow just shy of 30 different varieties.
Mm-hmm.
And like you mentioned earlier, we have several heirloom varieties, but we also have – varieties that are popular nowadays. Honeycrisp is one that everybody loves, and it's a great apple.
Except me.
And so especially many, how about that? But still have a lot of Honeycrisp, Yellow Delicious. I have a personal preference for an Iowa Yellow Delicious. I think especially when you get that right up the tree.
For an eating apple.
Really hard to beat.
Yes.
But Jonathan's, Red Delicious, Chieftain. Chieftain's a variety of those.
Love Chieftains, yep.
University. Yep, a fun, unique history to central Iowa with its heritage here. And so still have lots of varieties, and like I said, sending those all over central Iowa, and certainly have them available at the store as well.
Well, now we're going to be cooking apples for, a lot of Christmas things too. What is your favorite cooking apple that we could have right now?
We use a Jonathan for all of our things.
Okay.
A Jonathan is a fantastic all-around apple. It's got a great tart flavor to it, and it cooks extremely well. For generations, we've used the Jonathan apple, and we think that's just hard to beat.
What about your cider apples?
We will blend everything together in our cider. And so as we make cider twice a week right now, we are out there. We are back in the cider pressing area and the jugging area, and we're tasting it to make sure we've got that right blend of tart and sweet apples to try to maintain that level of consistency for a cider that we produce.
Now, what about hard cider?
So we like to say that's our generation's contribution, and I will give credit where it's due. That's my older brother who came back, and he started the hard cider operation, and it's been very good. Eventually, we realized that we could sell it too, and we shouldn't just drink it all ourselves. we'll use our own cider as the base for our hard cider. And so that's different than some of the larger hard cider options that are available in the store, because ours is 100% apple juice. Often you'll get an pineapple concentrate that's reconstituted with water, and that's the base for the fermentation. And ours is a lot more, I guess, simple than that. Take the cider, and we'll add the yeast to it for the fermentation. We've got several different flavors and varieties of hard cider that we developed over the years, and so things that range from a peach to blackberry. Cranberry is one that's available. We've got a small tap room out at the location in Jefferson, so cranberry is a real popular one right now. A spiced apple as well. So we have some fun with the hard cider.
Oh, good. Okay, so you're not growing any special trees that are hard cider trees?
We have not. There is an interest in bringing back some heirloom varieties that have more tannins and things mm-hmm. like that in them. And there's some really unique ciders that are being made with that. We stayed, our cider is more of a kind of middle of the road. We use what we think is a great stock with our standard cider as the starting point. And so there's a blend with it we start with, and that's what we've been fermenting. And we've really liked the product that's produced each year.
And the brewery is on the farm or in Jefferson City?
On the farm, we added an addition a few years ago, and so we added some taps to that. I think it was last year, and so when you come out and get your tree, you're welcome to sit down and try a flight of different hard ciders as well.
Oh, sounds good. You said you make hard cider quite often. How big a batch of cider does one make at a time?
We make it in fermentation tanks. And so 120 or 240 gallons at a time, that'll ferment out. And then at the end of fermentation, we'll back sweeten, and we'll put that at that point when it's back sweetened and then we carbonate it. We've got our hard cider, and we put those into stainless steel bright tanks. They call them 200-gallon tanks. And that's what we'll either keg out of or bottle out of.
Ha! And then there's your fresh cider that you press. How big is that operation?
We'll make fresh cider. We make roughly 35,000 gallons every year. And so each press ranges from 500 to 1,000 gallons. And we will, we've got a jugging machine. It's pretty old school, so it's still hand jugged. And so
it
goes right into the gallons or half gallon containers. And then those are available right on site. And that's what we deliver to stores around central Iowa as well.
So what I can buy in my local store here is, let's see, I believe you have filtered and unfiltered, right?
We have red label and yellow label is probably what you're thinking of.
Yeah.
And so the only difference between those is we add a preservative to the yellow label.
Red label is
straight apple cider. Everything's pasteurized, so it runs through a pasteurization process, mm-hmm. And then it goes right into the bottle. The yellow label, we just add a preservative, so you'll get roughly 2 months of life in a fridge. All of it stays in the fridge. Red label is more like 2 weeks.
Yeah. Well, mine never even lasts 2 weeks. I just glug it right down. It's so good. So now, does that mean if I wanted to ferment some homebrew, I would get the one without the preservative, right?
Do the one without the preservative, yeah.
Uh-huh.
Add some yeast in there. There is natural sugar.
Uh-huh.
So you'll get some of the fermentation already. But if you want to control it, you can add some sugar too, and then that's how you can start to control alcohol percentages. And yeah, have at it. We can have a partner hard cider business.
Oh, I think I'll just buy the one that you do already. So
it's fun to do things in your kitchen, and but the trouble is, you never quite, is it done? Is it ready? Now what?
Yeah. Right.
One learns.
Lana and I did a thing this summer where we fermented tomatoes for the first time.
Oh.
Pickled fermented tomatoes. It was an adventure, and it actually came out well, but you never know until you taste it, right? It's like, yeah, this could go any way you can imagine.
Now, you did two different methods, and one I thought, well, I don't know if I do, but one of them, one was without salt, and one was
total fermentation with herbs and spices and hot salt water, right?
Uh-huh.
And the other one was with some vinegar. We were doing some Ukrainian, this is a Ukrainian and Eastern European tradition, and we thought, well, let's try it. Good heavens. Lana grows 30 varieties of tomatoes, so We picked some little kind of golf ball sized ones in the fermentation. It worked! It worked!
It was lovely. And I really liked the, not the vinegar ones, but the other ones were pretty darn good. I guess they were.
Now, do you, on your ciders, your, the fermented ones, when you say back sweeten, what do you, how do you do that?
So after the fermentation's complete, you have a wine. So it's an apple wine in our case. And we will take that wine, we'll, when we say back sweeten, we take and we add our cider back to it. And so the same starting material, what that does, it brings the alcohol content a little bit, brings the alcohol content down, adds a little bit more flavor, we think, to it. And it gives an end product that seems to really match what people are looking for here in a cider. We do offer a dry option. We have that on tap. We haven't started bottling or distributing that, but that's one, where we don't back sweeten.
Oh!
Yep. So dry ciders are a lot more popular, across Europe. There's some great dry ciders out there. And so we offer one of those on tap as well.
Good. Well, I guess I'll have to come over. I'm a dry cider fan. I'll have to drive over and have some there. Is this a thing you do by taste when it's, okay, how long do you ferment in the vats?
So the fermentation process, usually a couple weeks.
Oh,
it changes depending on temperatures.
Uh-huh.
We'll make, I think last year we were close to 5,000 gallons of hard cider. This year we have already easily surpassed that. But that's a fairly small operation compared to many of them out there. And so there's places where you've got very, very intricate controls for exact temperatures on fermentation. Ours, we've got a vat that we keep at room temperature, and we just track to see the fermentation process. If there's still pressure that's building in it, that means that fermentation is occurring, CO2 is being released. And so once that fermentation process is complete and we can visually tell that it's complete, which takes, like I said, a couple weeks. When it's a little bit warmer, it goes a little quicker. If it's a little bit cooler, it doesn't go quite as fast. And then at that point, we've got that apple wine. And we take that off of the bottom and start to turn that into the hard cider.
And do you do that by tasting, or do you have a formula?
Visually, we know when the fermentation is complete, and then there's a formula ratios for how we'll blend things back with back sweetening, and then when we're adding some of the flavorings or making some of the various batches. Some of it's by taste, certainly, especially the
that's the fun part, right?
The spice ones. So we call it quality control, right? You need to have a good product, so you need to make sure that you test the product all the time.
Well, good. I'm glad you do. Good. Well, it sounds like there's a lot of
part
things.
Part of the job.
Good. Sounds like there's a lot of things going on in your orchard. People can go out and experience a little bit of Christmas with Christmas trees and ciders and good things to taste. And I asked you this before, but do you have Santa Claus installed in your little shop there?
We do have a Santa Claus there. My kids love going up. He stays there. He's actually a dancing Santa Claus. So you push a little button and he's dancing for you. Uh-huh. He's right beside, we've got an old sleigh and a tree put up. So a lot of people will come out, take a family picture, and then get that hard cider and walk through the gift shop and enjoy the full experience of coming out to get their tree.
Good. So this is in Jefferson, Iowa, and think of Ames is kind of in the middle. Go west, and you'll find Jefferson, Iowa. That's very good. How can we find more information about you, Chris?
If you go to our website, www.dealsorchard.com, and we also have a Facebook page that is frequently updated, and so you can find all sorts of information at either of those locations.
Good. Well, wish you all the best. Do you think you will be sold out of Christmas trees?
we will, in all likelihood, sell out of Christmas trees again this year, yes.
Well, so, good.
If you still need a tree, we'd recommend coming earlier rather than later.
Good. Christmas trees to a good home. Good home. Great. Thank you for being with us. We've been talking to Chris Deal from Deal's Orchard.
And happy holiday to you and your multi-generational family there on the Christmas tree farm.
Very good. Thanks for being with us.
Thank you very much for having me.
Good.
Very much appreciate it.
Okay.
You've been listening to KHOI, and stick around. Donna Lana Kitchen has more in store. You can find out more about this fine radio station and about this radio show by going to www.khoifm.org. Find out more about the Donna Lana Kitchen. We've got a web page there with past shows and recipes, and find out more than you ever wanted to know. Welcome back. We're talking about Christmas trees and Christmas things and red and green and holidays. And this leads us to poinsettias. Poinsettias, actually. It's a very hard word when you want to spell it. It's got a lot of extra letters in there. You wouldn't think poinsettias. We're going to dip into the archives here and listen to an interview we had with Kenny McCabe from Iowa State University, and he told us about poinsettias. Kenny McCabe. Kenny McCabe works at ISU, and get this, he is a building surface specialist in the ecology, evolution, and orgasmismal biology department. I can never say that, but yes, and there's a special place that he sort of hangs out. There's a building on campus called Bessie Hall, and on top of that august structure, there is a greenhouse. Kenny, tell us about poinsettias.
Yeah, for sure. So, one, just a brief thing about the greenhouse we have up here. It's a 12,000 square foot greenhouse, and I've been managing it for a few years now. I started in June of 2017. But the reason why we kind of got on poinsettias was because I personally grow a few up here. We grow, maybe 20 to 30 a year for a holiday party. And because of COVID, it was not happening this year. So we had a few extra, and I gave a few around to some folks I know. And, that's kind of what brought on the conversation here. So. Do you want to have some details about poinsettias, just some of the background? I think a lot of people don't really recognize where they come from. Yeah, so poinsettias are actually native to Mexico. They're a shrub that grows down there. They can actually grow anywhere from 10 to 15 feet tall down there, which is kind of fascinating. But a lot of the poinsettias you see nowadays have been cultivated and bred throughout the years, and there's all different kinds of varieties. I know we're kind of talking about red ones right now, but there's over hundreds of varieties of poinsettias that have been developed. You see reds, whites, pinks, burgundies, you get marbled and speckled ones. They also have poinsettias that they paint, so you can get other interesting colors that you can't necessarily develop. So
the blue and purple ones at the Hy-Vee.
Oh no,
with sparkles.
Yeah, a little glitter on the leaves, that kind of thing.
But what is so nice about them is this time of year, here they are. Of course, they don't grow here, but here they are, and they look just so absolutely red and green Christmassy. They're just so good. You told me that the red on the poinsettias, that's not the blossom.
That is correct. Yeah. So a lot of folks think those real showy, colorful areas are the flower, but really those are, they're called bracts, which are more or less modified leaves. And what you're seeing there is just, it's a modified leaf that basically exhibits a pigment that we see as whatever color that, cultivar is. So it could be either red or white, pink, that kind of thing. But the true flowers are the cyathia, are right in the center of all those colorful leaves. So if you look real close, you can see these smaller sort of oval or egg-shaped flowers that are right in the center. Usually, if it's a healthy poinsettia, you can have anywhere from a few up to, 20 or 30. It just kind of depends on growing conditions and cultivar, but that is the actual flower. So they're really discreet. It's the modified leaves are the bracts that we really enjoy for all the color. So it's kind of a funny deal there. You can always quiz somebody on that.
Well, when you have them in the greenhouse, what do they start from, seeds or cuttings or?
Yeah. So, nowadays everything is typically started from vegetative cuttings. So, yeah, so one of the biggest producers of poinsettias are the Ecky family, and they're out in California. I have a stat here. I think they grow over probably 70% of the poinsettias purchased, at least the cuttings themselves, and then they do about around 50% of the worldwide sales. So most of them come out of California, these cuttings. And what you get is basically just a small little shoot that is rooted in some kind of media, either rock wool or potting mix, that kind of a deal. And
you're talking like a 2-inch.
You pot that thing up and you start the growing process.
How big are the cuttings when you get them?
It kind of varies on the producers, but I would say typically there's about an inch buried with roots, and then you'll have an inch to 2 inches above the substrate. So about 2 inches tall.
Huh.
They'll have maybe 4 leaves. It just kind of depends. They don't look too impressive at that stage, but kind of the typical production process is you get those cuttings and you receive them, sometime mid-August. But what you want to do is you want to pot those up. And typically what you kind of see in the stores is anywhere from a 4-inch to a 6-inch pot. Sometimes you'll see larger. It just depends. You pot them up and you let them root into those pots for about 2 weeks. And during that time, you want to keep them underneath supplemental lighting. So up here, we've got high-pressure sodium lights, kind of those old red-colored street lights that you used to see. Now it's all LEDs. And you make sure that those lights are on for longer than 14 hours. You let them root in for about 2 weeks. Then you go ahead and pinch them. You want to make sure that you leave about 4 to 6 nodes or buds on that cutting, because they will kind of grow straight up for a little bit. And then what that does is it allows you to have 4 or 5 branches start growing, and that's why you see these nice filled out pots later on. And during this process, they're completely green. You don't see any of the red color or any of the cultivar colors, that kind of thing, or flowers. And then the magic thing of the fall equinox happens, which is, and that's when our day and our night lengths are the same. And poinsettias are a short day plant or a long night plant. So in order for them to flower and for us to see those beautiful leaves or bracts, they need to be under long nights, which triggers them to flower. And that's kind of the production schedule. And then after the equinox, you usually start to see color around late October to the beginning of November. And again, this all depends on timing of your scheduling. But then I typically up here try to make sure that they are ready after Thanksgiving. I'm not a fan of seeing poinsettias before Thanksgiving. I'm not opposed to it, but it's not my kind of a thing there.
A little more about keeping them healthy over the Christmas. A lot of water or not so much, full light or not such full light. What do they need to be healthy around Christmas?
Well, if you think about where they grow native, it's down in Mexico. So the best way to put it is you sort of want to try to match that. So I would say give them plenty of light. You don't want to let them dry out to the point where they wilt. That's not a good thing, but you also don't want to keep them completely soaked all the time. They're kind of a tropical desert type plant. So they can stay on the slightly drier side, but you don't want to let them wilt. That stresses them out too much. And then also they can get root rot issues if you keep them too wet. So I'd say plenty of light. In the flowering stage, fertilizer is not as critical. They're already kind of in a non-vegetative stage, so you don't have to worry about fertilizer too much. But then after the season is when you could start to beef up the fertilizer. So like when you bring them out during the summer, if you wanted to keep them on.
That was a bit of poinsettia wisdom from Kenny McCabe, and that was recorded in 2022. Remember 2022? Actually, I remember it in...
That's not now?
That was did Rachel. And...
Oh, 2019.
20. Oh, no, sorry. 2020.
Right, we're in 22. Yeah, I do remember 22. It's like happening now. Okay.
220. Okay.
As far as I know. I could be wrong, but...
Okay. Anyway, Kenny talked about this year he spent a good part of the fall sweeping up broken glass in the Betsy Hall.
Oh, so they got hit with the derecho.
It got pretty squashed there. Anyway, we're talking about good things for Christmas here.
Yep, now we got you all covered with the poinsettias and the trees. We are ready to go.
Right. Thanks to Chris Deal and thanks to Kenny McCabe for their words of wisdom. And we have a few upcomings. Events are coming
hot and heavy.
It's
the season, yep.
Yep. Now, before, I mentioned Story City's got its tree all lit up, and there's going to be a, coming up this Thursday, there is a holiday lighted parade in Christmas tree lighting in Boone. The Iowa Arboretum, this coming Saturday, has a Dan's Belgian Waffle Feed. So that's in Madryn at the Iowa Arboretum from 9 to 11:30. That'd be fun.
That sounds delicious,
yes.
Actually.
Ah, Saturday also, Ogden. Ogden has a Christmas tree event, a Christmas main street event. And Madryn has a lighted parade on Monday. Well, just all sorts of things going on. And Snow Magic kicks off in downtown Ames on, this Friday, 5 p.m. to 8 p.m. on December 2nd in Tom Evans Plaza. There will be probably good things going on. Yes, and there'll be more things that we'll talk about. Oh, actually, I think this coming weekend is the Tuba Christmas here in Ames.
Oh, is it already? Oh, my goodness.
It's always early because those Tuba people are in demand. I'm sure they are in demand. Good. So, think of the things you need to get your ducks in a row for the holidays.
It's time now, man. Get that calendar out, plan it. You know, certain things have to happen at certain intervals, and if you miss the window, that's it for the year.
Right. We can do this, though. So, happy holidays to everyone coming up. We're just getting started, folks.
Yes, I'm starting my fudge making.
See, planning ahead.
I'm planning the flavors I want to do this year.
Very good. Good. You've been listening to the Donalana Kitchen. We come to you every Tuesday at noon here on this fine community radio station, or repeated this evening, 7 p.m. Tuesday, or anytime on the KHOI website, khoifm.org. All sorts of good things going on. We had music today by the Barn Owl Band. My name is Lana Knoxville.
And I'm Donna Prisgintas.
And great engineering by Mike Murphy.
And happy holidays. Here we go.
Eat good food and enjoy life.